For too long, this wealth has been drained from our country while Washington has done nothing.
China warns the United States not to start a trade war. It's Monday, August 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, protesters fill Hong Kong streets. Overfishing in Africa linked to China. Much of the United States will be kept in the dark, at least for an hour. The science of goofing off a solar energy flower. All on today's VOA Asia. China is warning that any protective measures taken by the United States would definitely hurt bilateral economic and trade relations. China's Ministry of Commerce, referring to President Donald Trump's signing of a memorandum to determine if Chinese policies hurt intellectual property rights, innovation, or technology development, said Beijing would not sit back, but would take necessary measures to safeguard its legitimate rights. Mr. Trump says that intellectual property theft costs millions of U.S. jobs and annually about $600 billion in lost revenue.
For too long, this wealth has been drained from our country while Washington has done nothing. They have never done anything about it. But Washington will turn a blind eye no longer. Today, I'm directing the United States Trade Representative to examine China's policies, practices, and actions with regard to the forced transfers of American technology and the theft of American intellectual property. As President of the United States, it's my duty and responsibility to protect the American workers, technology, and industry from unfair and abusive actions. We will stand up to any country that unlawfully forces American companies to transfer their valuable technology as a condition of market access.
Mr. Trump vowed to combat the counterfeiting and piracy that destroys American jobs and enforce the rules of fair and reciprocal trade that form the foundation of responsible commerce. Patrick Chovanec, chief strategist at the New York-based Silvercrest Asset Management, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the significance of the decision lies in the fact that Mr. Trump says this is only the beginning.
This is a long-standing issue, the theft of IP or the forcible transfer of IP that a lot of administrations have been concerned about, and it deserves serious attention and perhaps pressure on Beijing. But how that fits into the rest of President Trump's trade agenda, that's really the key question.
And why is that a key question?
Throughout the campaign, argued that he would lower the boom on China and raise tariffs on them very broadly. And if he wants to do that, this is a mechanism to do that. Section 301 gives him very broad authority to impose tariffs that may or may not be really aimed at addressing the issue that he's raising.
Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer has authority now to launch a year-long investigation. What will be involved in that?
Well, usually these investigations come to the conclusion that the president wants them to come to. Really, the question is what does the president want to do in a year's time? Clearly, in the short run, he wants to raise pressure on China and hopefully negotiate about this. But Beijing has been unwilling to negotiate with the U.S. about this in the past. So if a year comes around, he's going to have a decision about whether to impose sanctions, including tariffs, or not.
Could this launch a trade war?
It very well could, depending on how they play it. If it simply is an excuse to impose a broad range of sanctions on China, even targeted sanctions in the past have led to tit-for-tat retaliation by China. And if these were much broader sanctions, of course, the response would be much broader in turn. So it really depends on where the president wants to take this, and this is sort of an early shot across the bow, if you will.
Patrick, as you suggested earlier, this is a big problem. Are these long-standing issues?
These are very long-standing issues. In fact, even companies that are very positive on maintaining trade relations with China and developing those relations feel that this is a very urgent issue that the U.S. government needs to pay attention to. I think the key question, and maybe where people will disagree, is what is the most effective way to bring China to the table and get a positive result instead of backlash?
China's warning notwithstanding, Patrick Chivonik says Beijing's policy of forced technology transfers have already poisoned the waters in bilateral economic ties, and a U.S. investigation should not be viewed as an assault on China. He said the key is whether President Trump will use this as a targeted solution to solve a targeted problem or as an instrument to introduce protectionist policies. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on VOANews.com. Differences on North Korea could test U.S.-South Korea relationship. Philippine churches to ring bells to protest drug killings. Tens of thousands protest in Hong Kong over jailing of democracy activists. Police say bandit gang abducts seven Pakistani police officers. Women leaders wrangle water taps. Security in India slums. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by the VOANews.com website, available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on the Internet. We continue now with VOA Asia. Tens of thousands marched in Hong Kong Sunday to protest the sentencing of three democracy activists who led the 2014 Umbrella Movement. Joshua Wong, Nathan Law, and Alex Cho were sentenced to 6 to 8 months Thursday for their role in the Umbrella Movement rallies, months-long demonstrations that called for democratic reforms. Their sentence was met with outrage from rights groups and activists who joined civilians in the march Sunday from the district of Wan Chai to the Court of Final Appeal to protest the jail terms. Organizers of the march did not give an estimate of the numbers, but police said 22,000 people attended the march at its peak, making it the biggest rally Hong Kong has seen since the original Umbrella Movement rallies. Wong, Law, and Chow and a number of other activists were informed in March that they would be arrested for their involvement in the student protests of the Umbrella Movement of 2014 and charged with creating a public nuisance. Wong was arrested during a rally in June ahead of a visit from China's Xi Jinping, demanding the release of now-deceased Nobel laureate Liu Xiaobo. Tens of thousands of student protesters took to the streets in 2014 in what became known as the Umbrella Movement to demand full democracy for Hong Kong. Happening now in Asia, before concluding his trip to Asia, U.S. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Joseph Dunford, has reassured Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe that the two countries share a strong military alliance as the region faces growing threats from North Korea. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always glad when you have a chance to stop by and join us for VOA Asia. Overfishing has become a serious problem in West Africa. There, environment groups and experts say foreign vessels are depleting the waters off of that very long coast by taking advantage of insufficient regional governance and enforcement. Some analysts blame China for the problem because of its ever-expanding distant water fishing fleet and unsustainable fishing operation. Marine experts say sustainable fishing requires collective action and cooperation of all participants. VOA Mandarin reporter Mo Yu has more.
Once among the richest in the world, West Africa's fish stocks are depleting by foreign vessels, some experts say. According to Greenpeace, there are about 400 foreign vessels in West African waters, with the majority coming from China. With more than 2,500 vessels, China has the world's largest distant water fishing fleet, and many of the ships are heavily subsidized by the government. Tabitha Mallory, affiliate instructor at University of Washington in Seattle and China fishery expert, told VOA that China's expansion of distant water fishing fleet began in 1980s.
The motivations, I think, are very complex. It's not, you know, it was initially mostly food security, but, you know, there's also the economic pressures, not just unemployment, but also the, you know, profit drive. And then also, you know, a way to, you know, kind of increase China's presence around the world and thus influence.
Yet China's growing presence in West Africa and other places around the world does not always generate positive image for China. John Hosover is the director of Greenpeace's Oceans Campaign.
China has become a significant problem for West Africa.
2 years ago, Greenpeace published a report on West African fisheries, documenting numerous cases of Chinese illegal fishing, including ships that misreported their coordinates or underreported their tonnage. In February 2017, Greenpeace's Esperanza set out to West Africa waters on another trip. Unsustainable fishing, including overfishing and illegal fishing, has posed a threat to global fisheries. The problem in West Africa seems more severe. The New York Times ran an editorial on May 3rd, labeling China as the major predator in West African waters. Chinese government has insisted that it oppose any kind of illegal fishing and require all Chinese fisheries companies to obey the law. But Mallory said that China has not lived up to international norms.
Technically, they can say they're complying, but in, you know, but really, you know, they're not kind of fully complying, you know, with the spirit of those laws. Like their fishing is, you know, especially off the coast of West Africa, where there's very little local governance and very unsustainable.
But she didn't think it's accurate to say that it's only China's appetite that has pushed West African fisheries to the brink.
It's not just China. You know, a lot of the fish that China catches, you know, off the coast of West Africa gets sent to Europe to the consumers there. I mean, what's happened is, you know, China has kind of filled, you know, kind of a gap that's developed after a lot of the other distant water fleets around the world have kind of pulled back a little bit.
Mallory said that sustainable fisheries requires all participants to cooperate to manage the resources sustainably. Ambassador Herman Cohen, former Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs and now President of Cohen and Woods International, said we should also help West Africa to enhance their monitoring and enforcement capability.
So they must acquire the necessary equipment and personnel to enforce, you see. I think if they need assistance to do that, they can request it. They can get it from the World Bank or from the United States or European Union.
Experts say participants should also include developed countries who should set a good example in sustainable fishing, as well as the parties at the end of the supply chain to ensure that seafood they sell are legal, ethical, and sustainable. Mo Yu, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news alert from VOA Asia. North Korea warned Sunday the upcoming U.S.-South Korea military exercises are, quote, reckless behavior driving the situation into the uncontrollable phase of a nuclear war. Pyongyang also declared its army can target the United States anytime, and neither Guam, Hawaii, nor the U.S. mainland can dodge the merciless strike. Stay informed by visiting the VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. Much of North America will be experiencing a total or partial solar eclipse later today. A total eclipse is something Americans have not seen in 99 years. Observers will be able to watch the moon completely cover the sun across a 113-kilometer-wide path of the U.S. mainland, stretching from South Carolina on the Atlantic coast to Oregon in the Pacific Northwest and covering parts of 14 states. U.S. Space Agency NASA scientist Michelle Thaler said it's a lifetime experience not to be missed.
I think they're the most beautiful things you can see in the sky. When you see the entirely eclipsed sun and the solar corona around it, it's actually safe to look at with your naked eye just for that brief time when the moon is entirely covering up the sun. It looks like the sky of a different world. You see the stars out during the day. You see a sunset 360 degrees all around you. And your instincts, I mean, it's actually kind of giving me goosebumps as I talk about it. Your instincts go kind of wild because the sky just shouldn't look like that. It is beautiful and it is profound. And I hope as many people as possible get a chance to experience it.
NASA is offering a smartphone app called the Globe Observer so that people can participate in an experiment using an inexpensive thermometer as the temperature drops and the darkness changes in cloud patterns. One community right in the path of the total eclipse is the tiny Pacific Coast town and tourist haven of Depot Bay, Oregon, population 1,500. Residents, however, have not seen anything like the crowds that are expected to arrive to sun gaze. Its handful of hotels and campgrounds have been sold out for months. Barbara Leff is Depot Bay's mayor. She tells VOA, in terms of crowd size, she's not sure what to expect.
You know, since we haven't had one of these before, we don't know what to expect. And others are predicting anywhere from 100,000 to 500,000. The guess is that they're coming mostly from the States because this is the first time in 100 years when people in the continental United States can drive to where the center of totality is for the eclipse.
Leff is excited her community will be among those to experience complete totality, providing the skies are clear enough.
Weather permitting, the forecast right now says that we will have somewhere between 50% and 65% of our visibility will be low, which is not unusual in the morning here. We often get morning clouds and or fog. This time of year, though, sometimes we also get very clear days. So we'll see something, but we don't know what. The thing about the eclipse is it's a life-changing event, I have been told, whether you can see it 100% or not. It does get dark. The temperature drops apparently by about 20 degrees. The birds stop singing. The roosters start crowing when the sun begins to come out again. It's just a very different kind of experience.
Barbara Leff said actually the best place to see the total eclipse will be in Madras, Oregon. It's a high desert community which experiences superior weather patterns and unobstructed views, located nearly 340 kilometers to the west, where just over 2 minutes of total darkness is expected. Developing at this hour in Asia, 72 years ago, the USS Indianapolis was sunk by a Japanese submarine after it had just completed a secret mission, delivering components of the atomic bomb used in Hiroshima to help end World War II. The cruiser's wreckage has been located nearly 5,500 meters below the surface of the Pacific. You'll see great stories and features every day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, today's culture values keeping busy and multitasking. Not only adults, but children and teenagers as well have become busier than ever. Neurologists and psychologists say keeping kids constantly learning and practicing, even during the summer vacation, really isn't good for them. So what to do instead? VOA's Faiza El-Masri tells us in this report narrated by Faith Lapidus, allow them to goof off.
Helping children succeed and thrive is one of the issues psychologist Lee Waters has been researching for two decades. In her book, The Strength Switch, she suggests that parents focus on building up their child's strengths rather than fixing their weaknesses.
In working with parents all around the world on this strength-based parenting approach, one of the common questions that I get asked is, okay, so once I've identified the strengths in my children, what do I need to do to build up those strengths? And in that question, there's often a kind of misconception that as a parent, the way that we build up our children's strengths is to get them into extra tutoring, get them into kind of every class possible.
The result is often an overcrowded schedule, keeping kids' brains constantly busy, learning, gathering information, and practicing.
Yes, practice builds up strengths, but so does downtime. One of the counterintuitives that we're finding in the field of neuroscience is that if you're constantly on task, if you're constantly practicing, in the end, it doesn't help to build up a skill or a strength as effectively as you might think.
Waters' book is mainly based on her own research, but she also cites a variety of studies by other researchers.
Some of my favorite researchers that I mentioned in the book are people like Dina Weisberg and her colleagues at Columbia University, who have done a lot of work on what happens to students' abilities to think and their well-being when we deliberately bring play back into the school environment. I love Kathy Hirsch-Pasek's research at Temple University on not overstructuring your kids. She's really influenced the way I parent personally. I love Mary Helen Amorto-Yang's research. She's a professor of education, psychology and neuroscience at the University of Southern California. And she's done a lot of work on the idea that our brains have these two alternative systems.
Those two brain modes or networks are on-task focus and free-form attention. Immorto Yang says the on-task focus is about perceiving one's environment, watching and paying attention. That happens when you play sports, for example.
You need to be watching other people on your team and running fast and coordinating your motions and reacting to the things that you're perceiving. And then there is another network that's extremely important for being able to make meaning out of what you're doing. And that network seems to be deactivated when people are, you know, sort of playing sports and attending to the outside. And it's activated when you're resting and just daydreaming, when you're thinking about your memories and imagining things that don't actually exist here and now. You need those two modes of attention in order to function as a person in the world.
Psychologist Waters says slowing down actually helps kids reach their full potential.
It's a little bit like if you have too many programs running on your computer starts to slow down. And when you shut down those programs, your computer speeds up again. It's very much like that for a child's brain.
Machines need to reboot, and kids need to goof off.
What I mean by goofing off is really allowing kids to have some downtime where they're not focused on a specific task, something that they choose to do, like shooting baskets or, you know, doing a creative project, cooking. It's a project that they're interested in doing that they can do more automatically and they get enjoyment from.
Goofing off doesn't mean the brain becomes inactive.
It goes into this default network mode and it uses that time to process all of the information it's had during the day, to integrate new information. It makes a kind of decision about what information do I keep and put into my memory, what information do I not need and I get rid of. It's also an essential network for helping us to develop emotional intelligence, to consolidate our memory, to develop a sense of identity.
Psychologist and book author Lee Waters says she hopes parents will be convinced that children don't have to be busy all the time, that they'll give their kids and themselves permission to goof off every now and then. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Some countries like the Philippines depend heavily on fossil fuels for power, but now a kind of solar energy flower is among the clean power alternatives there. The so-called smart flower can produce 40% more energy than traditional rooftop solar designs. VOA's Deborah Block tells us more about it.
This might look like a piece of modern art, but it's actually an award-winning solar power design. Inspired by a sunflower, each 59-square-meter unit has 12 solar panel petals that track the sun's light rays as they move during the day.
It'll show your friends, colleagues, business partners, or competitors you're really committed to going green, reducing your carbon footprint, and being a good steward of the environment.
Each unit is easily transportable and programmed to work autonomously. At sunrise, the system opens or blooms to expand its petals. Once it detects the sun has set, it shuts down and also closes in bad weather, like heavy rain. The first smart flower was set up at a school to show people the importance of using clean energy.
By getting their attention, it will give us a time for us to share our advocacy, to share with them the reason why we're using this.
Students at the school feel the same way.
We really want to save energy and also save the environment at the same time.
Even though coal generates almost half the power in the Philippines, the smart flower is providing an option that relies on much cleaner, renewable energy. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and however you've been listening to us, we'd like to know. Send us a note via VOA Asia Facebook. Our thanks go out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Aydin Utku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Byrd on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.